Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to The Delicious Podcast, Christmas series with me, Jilly Smith. And this week I'm with Ken Hom, the man who brought the wok to British cooking. We'll be talking about his Christmas as a boy in Chicago's Chinatown, his homes in Paris and Bangkok, and what he cooks for his house full of guests for Christmas lunch. But first, he shows me how to make Cantonese crispy noodles with chicken at the Dorchester's Chinatown restaurant kitchen. I asked him why it's something he just can't do without during the feasting season.
Because number one, it's easy. When you have Christmas, it's so stressful because you have so many people over. You've been cooking all this time, making a lot of preparations, etc. So you're sort of exhausted, and you want some comforting food. And this is why I love this dish, because it's easy to make, it's wonderful, it's always successful, and it's so easy to do, which is perfect for, after the big Christmas feast, after you've been drinking and everything like that. I mean, how do you chill out? I mean, what do you... We have strips of chicken here, which we put some salt and pepper on it. That's how easy it is. This you can actually do ahead of time, so... You're preparing, you have a busy Christmas, you can have this in the fridge sitting, and you mix some corn flour to that strips of chicken.
That's going to crisp it up a little bit.
No, that's not going to crisp up, because we're doing a technique called velveting. I'll show you why in a moment. We're not frying the actual chicken, but we're cooking it in a little bit of water, and we're just taking it in and out, and then we're going to... we're going to do the noodles first.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another thing which is very nice, because you can fry this ahead of time before everybody comes. In other words, you can even do it the day before if you want. Now, the noodles, you can either pan fry it, or you can just deep fry it a little bit.
So when you say that you can do the noodles ahead of time, does that mean that
you can fry
them?
You blanch them to soften them, and then you cook them in, you fry them in the oil, like this.
What kind of oil is
that? That's just groundnut oil, which is very good. By the way, groundnut oil is wonderful for making fish and chips.
But it is the heavier of the oils, isn't it?
Yeah, and what is nice about it can withstand very high temperature, which is what's really nice about groundnut oil. And so you can get it super, super hot without it absorbing into the meat or, the vegetables.
Those noodles now are beautifully crispy.
Yeah.
They took, 30 seconds?
Yeah, 30
maybe,
seconds in a walk like this. You know, I love to do this, because when I entertain, I hate this thing where everybody's having a good time except me. Why? Because I'm working.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate that. And everybody is laughing, drinking champagne.
Now, what's interesting about this is that you're leaving these cooked noodles to drain in a sort of a colander, a sieve,
right,
up there, and which means that they are not oily. They're very beautifully crisp, because that's another lot of oil that you're using.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of doing this ahead of time, is that you have it crisping at a very high temperature, you let it drain, and what I usually do, I let it drain like this, and then I put it on kitchen paper. So It's not oily at all, which is really the beauty of this dish.
Mm-hmm. How do you heat the noodles later?
No, you don't heat the noodles. In fact, that's the beauty of it. The noodles don't have to be hot. See, because they're already cooked.
Now, you're flipping those noodles. Now, you, of course, introduced the wok to Britain back in 1984 with that extraordinary groundbreaking series. Ken Hong's Chinese Cookery.
It's amazing.
How does it feel whenever you go into somebody's house and you see these woks everywhere? It's all your fault.
Well, it makes me happy.
You've made a fortune.
Yeah. What is really wonderful is that people have it in their kitchens. And so I'm sort of like their kitchen god. And I love that.
I mean, seriously, it has actually transformed British cooking.
Yes,
I mean, we
absolutely.
Don't just use it for Chinese food, we use it for Thai food,
which
we
is
use
great.
It for Indian food.
And it's fast, it's quick. I think it's one of those things that it was at the right place at the right time. People's lives were moving faster, and they were, people wanted everything quick.
You're washing that out.
Yeah. Just some water. This is a bamboo brush. And because this is so hot that you don't even have time to muck around.
Yeah, of course.
Now, there's two ways you could do this. You could do this in oil, or this is a healthier way, which is velveting the chicken in a little bit of just plain water. And what we mean by velveting is we're taking the chicken and we're plunging it in the hot water, taking it out immediately. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to cook. We're going to cook it again. So,
it's like blanching.
Yes, exactly. We're blanching the meat, so to speak.
And what's the point of that?
Well, it's to partially cook it so that, but not cook it sort of too much.
Yeah.
You know, nothing is worse than overcooked anything. So, I'm just turning off the water.
So you brought that water to the
good
boil.
Swirling it around.
Already in the corn flour.
Right. And egg white. Okay.
So the egg white is kind of poaching in there.
Yes. We're just swirling that around, and that's partially cooking it. Now remember, we're going to cook it again later.
So you're taking it straight out.
Yes, right out. And we're letting it sit. And remember, as it sits, it continues to cook. See, that's what a lot of people don't realize about foods. I always tell people when they're making their Christmas roast to let it sit outside and rest for at least half an hour or more, because people are afraid that it will get cold. And you know, that's the thing about cooking that chefs know about. You know, that you must be really vigilant, not overcooking. Nothing is worse than dried out.
And the wonderful thing about Christmas is that everybody's in one place. Nobody really moves. You've
exactly.
got time,
that's right.
haven't you? Even for this incredibly fast cooking.
Right.
What are you doing now?
Okay, now we're just going to heat up the wok again. And we add a tiny bit of oil to this. And what we'll do is we'll cook the chicken.
So this is in the groundnut oil?
Yes.
Very much oil.
And then I'm going to add a little bit of chicken stock. So I'll just give it a little, what we call the flavor of the wok. At that point, I'm just going to take that out for a second. Again.
Okay, so this is twice cooked chicken already. How many times are you going to cook this chicken?
Now I'm making the sauce, and so you can use that with chicken stock. Exactly. Oyster sauce, which is essential for this. And this is a very southern Cantonese thing. This is something I grew up with. I mean,
this is in Chicago, Chinatown.
Yes, exactly. This soy sauce. Yeah, a little bit. Wonderful rice wine. And you know what's really interesting to see things that when I started cooking, it wasn't available. It's available now.
Everyone.
everywhere. You can find it in supermarkets.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of pepper, which is nice.
How was that when you were actually doing the BBC series back in the 80s? Because the ingredients weren't really available, were
And you have to, say, well, we tried to be as authentic as possible, but at the same time, we also try to let people, they said, substitute this if you can't get that. So things like rice wine was not available. So I said, you know, use dry sherry. I tell you, it's really funny when people quote me on that. I mean, when people say, oh, if you can't get rice wine, use dry sherry.
And now, of course, nobody would ever do that. You don't need to.
No, you can buy it in your supermarket, which is amazing. I mean, that it's. I've seen this country transformed as far as food is concerned. And I think that has a lot also to do with the food retailing business.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been very good at moving and making, you know, food in this country is so cosmopolitan and it's wonderful.
I think, of course, it's a win-win for them. They create new markets,
exactly.
And people lap it up.
Yes, they do.
Because we're so open to ideas, we're a much more diverse society than, say, France, where you live.
Exactly.
And what are you putting in there?
Just a little bit more oyster sauce.
You're not tasting at the moment.
No, not yet. You know, when you're cooking, also too, I think instinct is important too. Yeah, it's important to taste. But also, that's lovely. And at the very end, I'm going to add bean sprouts, not to actually cook them, and add the chicken. Return the chicken back to the wok. Give that a really lovely stir. And just let that sit while we take our noodles, which we'll put in a plate.
As well, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's actually what you need. You don't need something heavy after you've been drinking all day and eating heavy food.
So spooning over that lovely chicken with bean sprouts in that beautiful velvety oyster sauce over the noodles.
And what is lovely is you have the chicken and you have the crispiness of the noodles. And the freshness of the bean sprouts. I mean, it's sort of after the big plunge at Christmas.
And would you would have this every Christmas, would you?
Oh, I absolutely. Because number one, I know it's easy. I know it's a big hit.
Yeah.
And you know, you always do what is a sure thing. Don't experiment.
After the break, we sit down to eat those noodles and find out what Christmas was like for him growing up in Chicago's Chinatown.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I didn't grow up with Christmas because I grew up in Chinatown, and so it was a new thing to me. I love my mom dearly, but she didn't buy me prez or anything because, she didn't believe in that, and she didn't have a tradition of that because she came from China.
But also, she was a single mom. Your dad died when you were one. You grew up in a very hard environment. She had to work very hard to look after you, didn't she?
And thanks to her, I mean, somebody had asked me, you know, can, you know, what do you attribute your success to? I said, to my mom, you know, and with her values. And she was really good at giving me the love and affection, which actually was transmitted through food as well. So even though we were poor, we still ate well. I mean, what I meant was I could have eaten more, but I didn't eat enough.
Tell me about how Christmas felt being an American Chinese.
It was funny because before I started working at age 11, there was all these Christmas trees that I would see outside of Chinatown, and people would have them in their windows. And I remember once I was invited because I was in Chinatown to show Chinese children what Christmas was like in an American family. And they had all these prezzies, and which I thought, this is nice.
Not something you'd experience.
No, but I was pretty horrified at seeing their Christmas turkey, which was the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life. I said, my God, this would feed all of Chinatown. It's so big. It was frightening, actually.
So did your mother pay any heed to the Christmas meal?
No, my mother said, number one, we would never eat turkey because it's too big and it's overcooked. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the furthest thing from our mind. I mean, we probably maybe would have duck or something, and we did not have a traditional Christmas. Christmas actually came later in my life when I was going to university with friends. You know, they were American or friends from Europe, and we would do Christmas together. And for the first time, I loved that because I could do... you know, actually, I do make a mean turkey in a different way because I had boned it out and I steamed it, stuffed with glutinous rice. And then at the very end, I would crisp the skin by pouring hot oil over it. And it was really good.
Wow, I bet. So, I mean, that's the glorious thing about, you know, mixing different food cultures. And a lot of places in the world don't allow that, including your residency now in France. They don't really play with other ideas. But how wonderful that must have been for your university friends. Did everybody just pop with pleasure?
Well, you know, yes, everybody loved it. And, of course, you know, we had good drinks and... occasional smoke a joint or something like that, so everybody was happy.
Yeah, I bet. This is Berkeley, California in the 1970s, yeah.
But you know what's nice about food today? It's like young people today. There are no borders and barriers anymore. We're talking about a global world, and you can see that in food. You know, all the things that were considered like French or Italian or Chinese or Vietnamese, the barriers are being broken everywhere.
Really? Even in Paris where you live?
Oh, absolutely. Some of the best top restaurants in Paris now are Japanese.
True.
Doing Chinese food. There's a Korean guy who's doing fabulous mixtures of French and Korean things, which is sort of the talk of the town now.
It's interesting. We last bumped into each other at ZestQuest Asia, Cyrus Todwalla's response to the fact that young people are not learning Asian food on the typical culinary curriculum. And you would think that young cookery students tasting all the time would need Chinese and Asian food as part of their culinary repertoire.
Especially in today's world, where all these Asian cultures are part of the DNA of our culture. I mean,
absolutely.
And we have many Asians living here, very well integrated, which doesn't mean they have to reject what they ate.
Yeah.
What they ate has validity as well.
Yeah.
And it should be taught, just like... when we learn histories of other countries, it's the same thing. We should learn about their history, too.
Absolutely.
And their food. I think a lot of people don't realize that Chinese food has never been codified the way French cooking and even Italian cooking. You have books about how to do this, especially people like Escoffier and even Carême, way back, Antoine Carême, sort of did a thing about how to make certain types of things. Now, I understand, for instance, pastries has to be clarified because of the chemical element. If you add too much of one thing, butter, to puff pastry, you're going to have a disaster, yeah, right? It doesn't work. But we don't have that tradition of pastry in Chinese cooking. We don't have the preciseness of cooking. And you know that when you... when I had my cooking school in Hong Kong, all these different chefs I talked to, they all made like one dish so differently. They made it there. There's an outline of, I mean, they have a rough idea of like what one should do. A lot of it is just plain no common sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You get the wok hot, you add the oil. These are things that you, basic techniques that you learn.
Yeah.
But the taste of the food is very personal and individualistic, which is what's actually happening with food all over the world today.
Yeah.
You don't go to a French restaurant, you go to Robuchon's restaurant.
It's very much about the signature, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's their type. And so a good chef would have particular tastes. I mean, when I created restaurants for hotels and other people, I put in what I like to eat. I love Western food, but at the same time I love Chinese as well, and as my horizons expanded to Thai and Vietnamese, I began to incorporate all these different things. I was not chauvinistic about food. Yeah. If it was good, use it.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
And of course, you live in Thailand part of the time. You have a house in Bangkok, yeah?
Yes, I love the fact that not only can you go to markets, but you have restaurants that do very innovative food. Even, I mean, they take Thai food and not so-called deconstruct it, but they make it different, not traditional, heavy, make it lighter to meet today's needs, because people don't need all that sort of carbohydrate.
Yeah. Tell me about your Christmas this year. What are you going to do? Where are you going to be?
Well, this Christmas I'll be as always in Bangkok, and what I love to do is invite friends over for Christmas Day, and usually I do one or two sort of dishes that I can make in advance. I love that because I can freeze it so that on the very day I can relax and drink as much champagne as all my guests do. I mean, cooking as if I was in a restaurant and all my friends are having a good time. I mean, that's not fun.
What are you going to cook?
I'll probably do a braised pork belly, because pork belly is so good in Thailand, and of course it could be made in advance, and it's that kind of braised pork belly that everybody loves. It's you can cut it with a chopstick. I mean, it's so tender, it's easy to eat, and you can make a rich sauce with it, which is kind of Christmassy, because richness is part of what Christmas is about.
Yeah. What would you use?
And I would use a stock that I would make over 2 weeks with things in it like chicken feet and pig's trotters and everything. So it's rich and gelatinous. I love that kind of stuff. And then I would probably put in some oyster sauce or fermented bean sauce. And something I've learned in Thailand, living in Thailand, is the fish sauce, which actually an equivalent the Romans had to use too, which is amazing.
Really?
Yeah, they had to use a fermented type of fish sauce to flavor their food. It was really, very highly seasoned. And somebody discovered it. I wonder if they bought it from Asia. But anyway, all those kinds of things is a mixture of taste that I know, that I'm careful about. And of course, I make sure I taste everything before I freeze it. And also, I can take all the sort of fat out of the sauce before, and then so It will be rich, but sort of not coily and clingy and, you know, horrible, greasy in your mouth.
Served with what?
I would probably, you know, Thailand has such a wonderful organic jasmine rice. It would be a shame. You know, I had thought about serving it with potatoes, but somehow it doesn't seem right. And jasmine rice in Thailand is just so wonderful. I mean,
very Merry Christmas to you, Ken. Thank you very much. And now we're going to tuck into this fabulous Chinese noodles.
Merry Christmas to everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Delicious Podcast. Next week, we'll be talking turkey with farmer Paul Kelly, whose bronze wild turkeys live in the woods for 6 months and have been endorsed by Delia, Nigella and Jamie Oliver. I'll see you then.